Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. Pluto TV is free on all of your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
A whole lot of Democrats were on social media during this, just calling it an out-and-out disaster, a televised disaster.
On optics, this was a disaster.
But I thought it really was a very ineffective.
The Democrats have to be disappointed.
You look who's winning now. It certainly seems like Donald Trump is winning.
One after the other after the other. Democrats, after, during the Mueller testimony, were clearly either explicitly stating their disappointment, or you could see it on their faces. And now they've just moved to vilifying the Republicans again and saying, well, Bob Mueller's war citation, he is a war hero. And of course he was a war hero. You can be a war hero and be great at one thing and then have dropped the ball completely on something else. I mean, I never understood this. Because you're really good at one thing, you can't ever be criticized again. But you see, it's just lame. Nobody buys this. It's ridiculous. Joining us now, John Yoo, of course, one of our all-time favorites, former deputy assistant attorney general, and he joins us now. John, it's great to talk to you. Your first take on Mueller and what happened yesterday that for you was most startling.
Hey, Laura, thanks for having me back.
Absolutely.
I feel, one, that this was a disaster for the Democrats, and it's almost like they are the worst school teacher in American history because they think the American people are idiots. They think the American people did not know what was in the Mueller report, and so they made us read it over and over again. I think it just shows a lot of disrespect, actually, for what the American people know and what their views are on whether President Trump committed obstruction. I actually think the American people are a lot smarter than that. They don't need this report to be, do these dramatic readings of the report over and over again. And then the second thing is, I think, I'm sad to say it, I have a lot of respect for Robert Mueller, but we can see now why he didn't want to testify on the Hill. He gave really a bad performance. Here's a guy who clearly didn't want to be there. I actually think successfully didn't go beyond what was in the four corners of his report. And I think, he was halting. He was unsure. He forgot things. I was really surprised by his performance. It does make you wonder about the quality of the investigation. But the bottom line is that nothing of substance changed. I didn't hear anything new that wasn't in the report.
No, and there were a number of things that were stunning to me. And I played this soundbite, only part of it, but I played a soundbite last night from whenever it was he was appointed, May of 2017, June of 2017, when he was named special counsel. And everybody's like, Bob Mueller's the best guy, Bob Mueller is he's the lawyer's lawyer, Bob. I mean, anytime the elites build someone up that much, I think of like one thing, John Roberts. I'm sorry. I just think of like, he's the best. I'm like, wait a second. Let's look at the results. And about Bob Mueller, yes, he was an incredible war hero. He served his country as FBI director. He came in, what, a week before 9/11 as FBI director. But after he testified, I thought, gee, what we have to remember is that Mueller post 9/11, when he went up to the Hill, it was a pretty friendly questioning, wasn't it, after 9/11? I mean, it wasn't – when he was FBI director, did he get the kind of grilling ever that he got yesterday? Did that ever happen?
Oh, that's a good point, Laura. I mean, being a witness on the Hill in a hostile posture, let me say, I had to appear before that same committee when they were out to get me before – for my service in the Bush administration. It's not easy. It's not like anything else he'd probably ever done before. I mean, he's usually the one trying to cross-examine people, trying to show where they contradicted themselves. He's not used to being in the hot seat. You know, on the other hand, the Democrats weren't treating him in a hostile way during these hearings. They were trying to get him to do their job, right? If they really want to impeach the president, they should decide they want to impeach the president. They don't want to. They know it's politically damaging. They know that the substance isn't there. They want Bob Mueller to do the job for them, and he wasn't about to do it. You know, Mueller, you know, for all his, you know, weak performance, he was basically, the bottom line is that I'm not going to tell you whether to impeach anybody. If you want it to be obstruction, you make the decision. It's not, you're not going to get me to do it for you. But now, on the other hand, the Republicans, I thought, did a very good job making very important points. And there you saw Mueller. I was surprised to see Mueller falter so much on the legal issues. You know, I wouldn't fault the guy if he didn't remember a fact or two in this, you know, 450-page report. But some of the questions that the Republican congressmen were asking him, like, if you didn't think you could indict the president, why did you even have a volume two? Why did you even investigate obstruction? He didn't really have any good answers. That was what was really shocking to me from a substantive perspective.
And John, this moment, question from Steve Shabbat, who, remember, was a House impeachment manager along with Lindsey Graham and Sensenbrenner in 1998. Shabbat asked one of the best questions. Let's listen.
When you talk about the firm that produced the Steele reporting, the name of the firm that produced that was Fusion GPS. Is that correct?
I'm not familiar with that.
It's not a trick question, right? It was Fusion GPS.
The fact that Mueller did not have real familiarity or said he didn't have familiarity and didn't want to talk about Fusion GPS, that's what started the whole investigation, or the dossier, the Steele dossier, not going to discuss it or wasn't familiar with. I that didn't even pass the straight face test for me.
Yeah, 2 points on that. One is, it's incredible that you would not go and look at that, given that you're not just, you know, the thing was not just about getting President Trump. The investigation was about Russian interference with the elections. And, you know, if people thought, oh, Fusion GPS, all those documents were examples of Russian interference. But in fact, if they were, you know, Hillary Clinton's campaign, you know, tricking people into thinking it was the Russians, or if it was other foreign intelligence services trying to interfere in our elections, then you would think that would fairly fall within Mueller's investigation. So that's one. The second thing, it goes to the other point you were making earlier. If he doesn't have command of not every detail, but the most important facts like Fusion GPS, it makes you wonder how much of the report itself was the work of other staff people who Mueller did not have full control over and who had an axe to grind to get President Trump. And you know, if you read the report, it kind of reads that way.
Hodgepodge.
Sometimes the report goes too far. Yeah, it's a hodgepodge. Sometimes it's like two different people wrote it. Sometimes it tries to lay out a case against Trump, but then it says we're not going to indict him. These don't make sense.
Now,
there's the work of one person.
Yeah, John, doesn't it remind you of, and I said this before, but it's worth repeating. It reminds me of when one of my kids or so has to write a little paper, and it has to be 3 pages long, and like you make the margins bigger, or you add like block text to make it longer. Now let's throw this in. Oh no! If we summarize chapter two, then we'll definitely be 3 pages long. I don't know.
I'm never going to question how good your kids are at school. Come on.
Well, they throw stuff in when it's not necessary, and they just add their. It's called padding. Remember padding. Padding your essays. John never did that. He was always the stellar student at Harvard. John, this is a moment where I think a lot of Democrats really believed it was all falling apart in the Q&A with Congressman Ted Lieu.
I'd like to ask you, the reason, again, that you did not indict Donald Trump is because of OLC opinion stating that you cannot indict a sitting president, correct?
That is correct.
The correction comes next.
Now, before we go to questions, I want to add one correction to my testimony this morning. I want to go back to one thing that was said this morning by Mr. Lieu, who said, and I quote, "You didn't charge the president because of the OLC opinion." That is not the correct way to say it. As we say in the report, and as I said at the opening, we did not reach a determination as to whether the president committed a crime.
Your read on that one, John. Somebody really screwed that up.
Yeah, that was, it showed how weak Mueller actually was in his performance, which, is sad. I mean, it was just sad. But the second thing is this is actually the hardest part of the whole report, and it was bizarre. I think the Democrats themselves were split because some of them just want to drive for impeachment, and they wanted to use Mueller as a prop. But they actually couldn't get Mueller to cooperate. And you saw it just there. Lew is deliberately misreading the report. The report does not say that the indictments don't go forward only because the Justice Department, under the Clinton administration, took the view that sitting presidents can't be indicted. The report itself, though, also reflects what you were mentioning before, this kind of hodgepodge. The reasons that are given by Mueller don't make sense. And the Republicans did a good job yesterday bringing that to light, because if you really thought the president couldn't be indicted, a sitting president couldn't be indicted, then Mueller should never have taken the investigation for the months and months it took after he realized there was no collusion. He shouldn't have ever written a public volume two. It makes no sense. And so, Republicans legitimately are asking, why did you issue this report, Justice Department procedure? I was a Justice Department official. Justice Department procedure is if you aren't going to charge someone, then you don't say anything. This is what the Democrats got upset with James Comey and the Hillary Clinton email probe. And so Mueller's actually in a tough spot there, because he's actually having a hard time explaining why he reached the decision he did. It's not really clear. I actually think he should never have issued Volume 2 or even undertaken any investigation on obstruction, and he can't explain why he did it.
Yeah, it was another reminder of you have to know when it's time to leave, right? You have to know when it's time to retire, whether it's from sports or from a business career or from the law. I mean, some people are lucky. They can just stay, vigorous and on it into their 80s. I mean, there are people who can do that, but that's rare. I mean, let's just face it. That is rare. You have to know when you're not the man you were when you were 40.
I totally agree. I actually hold a Democrat. I'm actually, after yesterday, I'm more pissed off at the Democrats and Mueller, because Mueller didn't want to do this. The guy's in his late 70s. He didn't want to testify. He might have thought this was going to happen. The Democrats are willing to engage in public elder humiliation. Right? It's kind of like, I was watching. It's like this is almost like elder abuse. They're being so they're humiliating this guy, using him as a prop. They are so obsessed with getting President Trump that they are, they want to throw this distinguished guy under the bus and make him look like an idiot if they could get one little thing that might help them in their quest. I thought the whole thing was sad. I think actually the only people who came out looking okay were the Republicans and the Judiciary Committee, who used their time really well and asked some respectful but tough questions.
And that was rare, as John, you and I have spoken about before. How many times have we bemoaned the Republicans' inability to do effective cross-examination of witnesses? I mean, God bless Trey Gowdy. But all the hyperbolic, going on, God bless these guys. They're good people. And sometimes he's fine. Yeah. But in general, you need someone who does this every day, going in there and asking questions, or someone who does this every day, feeding the questions to the Republicans. But they surprised me yesterday. They surprised me. Yeah. They did a good job.
Yeah. You used to be a courtroom, defense lawyer.
Yep.
I never had that. I don't know, burden or privilege, I don't know what you want to call it, but, you will see they had a lot of people up there who were doing a very effective job doing cross-examination. But also I think unlike the Democrats, who are strangely just like reciting, saying, oh, Mr. Mueller, let me read your report. Did I get it right? Sir, it was a waste of time. But the Republican side, they really had a sense of where the Mueller report was actually quite vulnerable on the law. And they came back to it, and I came away thinking a lot of, if people watch the hearings, they're going to realize that what the Mueller investigation did in its second volume and with the obstruction investigation really was not called for. And that's not something I think that has really broken through sort of the media, which is just obsessed with you know, obsessed mm-hmm. with obstruction, which has been obsessed with there being collusion, even though Mueller clearly found there wasn't. So I thought they did a great job. I wish they did that more often, but at least when the stage was that important, they rose to the occasion.
There was a moment during the testimony when Mueller was asked about whether Trump can be charged with obstruction after he leaves office.
Earlier today and throughout the day, you have stated the policy that a seated president cannot be indicted, correct?
Correct.
And upon questioning this morning, you were asked, could a president be indicted after their service, correct?
Yes.
And your answer was that they could.
They could.
Director, please speak into the microphone.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
So
they could.
The follow-up question that should be concerning is, what if a president serves beyond the statute of limitations?
I don't know the answer to that one.
Would it not indicate that if the statute of limitations on federal crimes such as this are 5 years, that a president who serves a second term is therefore under the policy above the law?
I'm not certain I would agree with the conclusion. I'm not certain that I can see
but the
possibility that you suggest.
Yeah. What did you think of that exchange? Because I think the Democrats are using that as a campaign, and they're going to use that as a campaign push. Vote him out of office so we can finally go after him criminally.
You know, when I listened to that, I thought, wow, they are really grasping at straws. Mm-hmm. If they're going to, you know, I hope that that's their central campaign plank. And some of them are crazy enough maybe to make it their campaign plank is, oh, well, let's get into this fine discussion of the statute of limitations and whether the founders thought you could indict a president after they leave office. Look, that's true. You can indict a president after they leave office, but they can't here because this is actually, Lord, one other thing I thought that was completely missing that the if I had been a Republican congressman, this is one last issue I would have brought out, is mm-hmm. it is crazy to have a Congress braying and demanding that a prosecutor prosecute someone. That is why the founders actually said, we're not going to let the Congress be in charge of prosecution, because they're like a mob, and sometimes they're going to just try to get someone. And you could see a perfect example of this. People have forgotten, actually, that the mm-hmm. Justice Department has considered whether to indict President Trump for obstruction, and it said no. It wasn't Mueller. It was Barr, Attorney General Barr. People forget. After he got the report, he said, okay, Mueller's not going to decide. I'm looking at the evidence. I'm not saying we won't indict him because he's sitting president. Just based on the evidence, the Justice Department declines to prosecute. In 99.9% of cases, when the Justice Department decides not to prosecute, that's over. It will never reexamine this decision again. And so this is such a stupid claim that the Democrats are making, because the Justice Department, its basic traditions and customs are that once it's decided we're not going to go after someone, then the thing is over. We're not going to do it again.
That's
done. It's over.
That's another excellent point. This is why John is such an unbelievable lawyer, incredible professor. I mean, it seems like a basic point, but I didn't think about that. What are they doing? You know, that's not within the purview, separation of powers. You're supposed to make laws. Appropriate money, and that's your job. And Justice Department had its job, and it did its job to great expense to the U.S. taxpayers and tumult to the country. It's an excellent point.
And that, you know, you could say, like, the most charitable explanation you could have for what Mueller did is he thought, this obstruction thing is too hard. I'm kicking it upstairs. If the Justice Department is going to indict a sitting president, well, then the Attorney General better decide, because it's so important. And in this case, the Attorney General did decide, and the Attorney General decided no. He didn't say presidents are immune. He said there's insufficient evidence. They don't even need to get to the law, because there's no facts here that really amount to obstruction. I think Barr made the right decision, and that decision usually will bind all future Justice Departments. So, President Trump doesn't win a second term. He's not going to get indicted by the Justice Department.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No. It's absolutely not going to happen. John, another thing that a dear friend, a really good lawyer, called me this morning, and it's something that I had raised, but not in the way that she raised it to me, and it's so important that we talk about this. Is there not, under the professional code of legal ethics, an affirmative responsibility for lawyers working on any case, but including a case, of course, especially like this, where it's political, it's considered political in nature. It's incumbent upon the lawyers on the team to raise any potential conflicts that would cast any type of aspersions of bias onto the underlying investigation, namely Andrew Weissman, Jeannie Rhee, Peter Strzok, all these individuals. Didn't they have an affirmative obligation to raise their connections to the Clintons and their political bias against the president?
Oh, yes. In fact, I think it's stronger than raise. I mean, I think if you are a prosecutor, first, you shouldn't be giving money and doing all this stuff in the first place,
right.
But they're doing that. So if they're giving money to Clinton campaign, they have friends, right? There's all this sort of incestuous links between the Obama Justice Department and the Clinton, whatever it is, you know, team or ass, whatever, the Clinton network. They should just decline to take the job. They shouldn't, you know, that's the honorable thing to do, is say, you know, I have so much familiarity or friendships or connections, or I've given money. I can't, even if they think they could do it in an unbiased way, just they should recuse themselves or not participate, because the appearance, and this is what has happened, right? The appearance of a conflict can undermine the integrity of the investigation itself too. And that's exactly what happened here. None of those people should have accepted the request to work on the investigation in the first place.
Right. So the point I was making last night on the Ingram angle on Fox was the Mueller team had a responsibility. Someone on the team had a responsibility to vet each hire. And when Mueller was asked about this, this is what he said.
Andrew Weissman attended Hillary Clinton's election night party. Did you know that before or after he came onto the team?
Don't know when I found that out.
Are you aware that Ms. Jeannie Rhee represented Hillary Clinton in litigation regarding personal emails originating from Clinton's time as Secretary of State?
Yes.
Did you know that before she came on the team?
No.
When did you first learn of Peter Strzok's animus toward Donald Trump?
In the summer of 2017.
You didn't know before he was hired?
I did not know that.
So the someone on the team had that job, I imagine, John, to go through, okay, is there anything in your background that would embarrass this investigation or make it a less effective or less credible investigation? Like, we did that at Skadden. Every time we took a case, we got a conflict check. The whole firm got a conflict check.
Yes.
And I don't know if anyone even did that. It seemed like, from what Mueller said, he wasn't aware that anyone did that. And when he was asked, as you heard about Jeannie Rhee, the follow-up should have been, she was your law partner. She worked for the Clinton Foundation. And she was your law partner. He's like, well, I didn't know about that. Like, what? What the heck? It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I think this is, you know, some people have been saying maybe Mueller was a figurehead. I tend to think he wasn't. But when you hear things like this, you really wonder, because he did try to stand up his team very quickly. But these are basic, as you say, basic questions you would ask. Not even that he should never have even asked any of them after he just briefly glanced at their web pages. But particularly if people who he's worked with in the past and their partners in his law practice, he should already know what kind of clients they've had, what kind of work they did. And one other thing is, it's not like there aren't other people who can do this. There
oh, my gosh.
Thousands
so easy.
Of excellent federal prosecutors in the country right now, and then there's thousands upon thousands who've, you know, who are former federal prosecutors. There's a lot of people who could do the job that Mueller was asking these people to do. He didn't have to pick these people. I think these people took advantage of the guy in a way. This is why
right.
I sort of feel badly for him. You sort of saw that on display yesterday that, hey, as you said, he's getting older, he's getting close to retirement. I think other bad people, you know, not bad, but people with ulterior motives maybe took advantage of him, because, again, the theme through all this is that there are these people who are so out to get President Trump, so disregard the results of the election, that they were willing to trample, as you said, this important ethical rule, or to, you know, abuse, you know, Director Mueller himself on TV, just their way to do whatever it takes to try to get Trump.
We're talking to John Yoo, former deputy assistant attorney general in the United States and law professor, and he's just been giving us the best analysis of this Mueller investigation, and it is closed. It is over. You can stick a fork in the idea of impeachment. They'll talk about it, but they're not going to do it. And they may try to do their version of lock her up to Trump during the campaign. I mean, I'm reading a lot about Elizabeth Warren today. Because there's a big business week, a Bloomberg business week. I swear it's got to be 5,000 words. It is the longest article about Elizabeth Warren. I'm reading it on my phone going, oh, my God, I'm going to develop a repetitive stress injury on my hand just reading this. It was ridiculous. So I'm scrolling. But I can see some of her followers who are just rabid about impeaching Trump. You know, they could very well do the same thing, lock him up. And I think that is, you know, that could be the strategy. And when you listened yesterday, one more thing, John, before we move on to another topic, the idea that Mueller himself was to exonerate or not exonerate the president. Let's listen to this exchange.
Mr. Mueller, nowhere is there a process or description on exonerate. There's no office of exoneration at the Attorney General's office. There's no certificate at the bottom of his desk. Mr. Mueller, would you agree with me that the Attorney General does not have the power to exonerate?
I'm going to pass on that.
Why?
Because it embroils us in a legal discussion, and I'm not prepared to do a legal discussion in that arena.
And so this is the part that I don't understand. If your report is to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General doesn't have the power to exonerate, and he does not, and he knows that you do not have that power, you don't have to tell him that you're not exonerating the president. He knows this already. So then that kind of changed the context of the report.
No, we included in the report for exactly that reason. He may not know it, and he should know it.
Your reaction to that, John Yoo?
Well, I think Congressman is right. The Attorney General, the Justice Department, and certainly a prosecutor like Robert Mueller, it's not their job to say this person's innocent. Their only job is to say we think this person's guilty, and it just would overthrow the traditions of the justice department, the very notions of how we train and how we want our prosecutors to act, to say that they should go around and provide all this evidence against people. But it just wasn't quite enough for us to prosecute, because that besmirches people's reputations. Also, it's cheap and unfair, because the other person, the target, never gets to defend themselves, and a court never rules on whether what the prosecutor is saying is truthful or not. But the other point to make here is that what the Democrats are trying to do is, you know, the only constitutional tool, really, if Congress really feels a president has abused his power, is impeachment. The people in Congress, the House Democrats, they don't actually, even though, as you said, Elizabeth Warren's out there, lock him up or whatever, they actually aren't willing to put their money where their mouth is. They have a constitutional tool. It's called impeachment. They're unwilling to use it. So what they're trying to do is to try to get other people to do the job for them. So they want to read everything in the Mueller report. Of course, they were hoping Mueller would do their job for them. But what it really is an abdication of their own responsibility. So if they don't think they can impeach them, they should explain why. Right? But instead, they want the president to be under this constant cloud of investigation. And so that's why they like to use things like the Mueller report and try to say it doesn't exonerate him, even though it breaks the principles of the Justice Department to even issue a report like that.
Right. We keep going back to the founding idea of our country, that you're innocent until proven guilty. This investigation began on a false premise. I'm sorry, but it began on a false premise, which was a stupid dossier that was paid for by the Clintons, and it could very well have been false, ops information fed by Russians who just wanted to disrupt us with false information. We don't have any idea. But the fact that this continued to go on without the FISA court knowing any of this, no lawyer is ever subjected to sanctions, no professional ethics complaints filed against any of these lawyers. To me, it's a depressing chapter in America's legal system, and enough people are not talking about that.
It's even worse than you're innocent until proven guilty. I was thinking this is a case where he's not even innocent when he was proven innocent.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're still not innocent. Yeah,
we can't. Right, like, yeah. It really is kind of like this. This is really, really does kind of remind you of the, you know, show trials or the Star Chamber. I mean,
Soviets.
They're so convinced that he's a bad man. Right? It's like the Les Miserables. They're so convinced he's a bad man that there's got to be something he did that was illegal. You know, the foundational, the basic finding of the whole Mueller investigation, years of investigation, millions of dollars, thousands of interviews of people, is he actually was innocent. He didn't actually do any, Trump didn't do anything involving collusion or conspiracy with Russia.
No, it's just absurd. I have to ask you quickly, John, about another San Francisco judge appointed by Obama issues an injunction yesterday to halt the Trump administration's effort to limit the asylum claims of Central American migrants. Judge John Tigar issued a nationwide preliminary injunction against the rules which effectively forced most of these migrants to lodge asylum claims in the first country they enter rather than at the U.S. border, even if they cross the border between points of entry. So, again, the Trump administration, thwarted by a single federal district court judge. This has happened dozens of times, and this is we have this horrible crisis still at the border. It's slightly diminished, but we're basically just funneling people into the country more effectively now. That's what's happening. So children are being held for less time in Border Patrol facilities. They're being put in HHS care and then released more efficiently. So that's how it's going.
You know, we've talked about this before on your show. You know, I think it's a misreading of the law and the way our system should work, that a single judge in a single city can bring the entire federal government to a halt. But since judges have reached out for that power, and I'm looking out my window right now at San Francisco where this is all going on, and you know, the resistance, the people opposed to Trump, are bringing every lawsuit in San Francisco because they know they have this very friendly bench out here. One that's been reversed many times, you know, by the Supreme Court, just in the travel ban, you know, which might seem like long ago, but it was just last year. And so I think that is a practice that has to stop. The Supreme Court could put a stop to it, and Congress could certainly put a stop to it. Second, I think this is one of these areas where judges should show some modesty, some humility. You know, this is a difficult area, as you just mentioned, a lot of hard policy issues, also involves the negotiations between the U.S. and Mexico. And one thing the founders, when they wrote the Constitution, did not want, never envisioned, is that federal judges would start deciding cases involving diplomacy, involving sensitive foreign relations questions, particularly with nations like Mexico right across our border. Thirdly, I think actually the Trump administration may well be right on this, because I looked at the statute, and it says that if you have an agreement with another country, then you know, people who are coming in and seeking asylum can be made to wait in the first country. You know, the first country they enter, as you say, Laura, which is Mexico, as long as it's a safe country, and that's Mexico. And certainly we think Mexico is a safe country because we remove and send back people there all the time who are in the country illegally. So I expect it will rapidly go up through the courts. And I would think the Supreme Court, if not even the crazy Ninth Circuit out here, would reverse this judge.
Yeah, it's another reminder of how brilliant the founders were to separate these branches of government, and the executive has plenary authority on immigration. I mean, really, this on these types of immigration decisions for, you know, emergencies, for crises, for basic types of rulemakings, this is not even a close call. And
no, I mean, Supreme Court
not even
said,
yeah, as of course with the travel ban case.
Yeah.
So again,
just a year ago.
Yeah, just a year ago. But it doesn't matter. Again, it doesn't matter. And it reminds us that Mitch McConnell has to speed through these nominations and get as many people on these lower courts as possible. And you know, we're close to flipping the Ninth Circuit, right, to Republican appointees.
Yeah,
is that right?
I thought you or I would live to see that day. But yeah, they're just, it's a 28 judges. They're just, I think, four short now of making a really balanced court. And if there's any place that's the center of the legal resistance to the Trump administration, it's the courts out here, in the Ninth Circuit in particular.
John Yoo, we're going to have you on TV tonight. Thank you so much for joining us again. Just one of my absolute favorite people, let alone lawyers. So you take care, John Yoo. Have you ever gotten robocalls or mail saying that you're pre-approved for loans or credit cards? Oh, if you have, let me just tell you that thieves, both foreign and domestic, may have you in their sights. And it's the equity in your home, believe it or not, that they want. Well, it's called home title fraud. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in the United States. And it's where thieves are after your money, and they get it by forging your home's title. So it ends up looking like you sold your home, even though you didn't. Then they'll take out loans against your home and stick you with all the payments. It's a nightmare. No insurance, bank, or identity theft program protects you, though. But Home Title Lock does. For pennies a day, Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's online title and mortgage, and it helps keep thieves away. Again, if you've received robocalls or mail for pre-approved credit cards or loans, you need to move fast. You can receive 60 risk-free days of Home Title Lock protection now by going to HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address to verify that you're not already a victim. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Everyone loves summer, except when it comes to sleeping, because there's nothing worse than ruining a great night's sleep in these heat-trapping sheets with no way to get cool. Well, you want to stay dry. You want to get your rest. That's why I use Sheeks. Sheeks patented sleep tech fabrics breathe 10 times better than traditional cotton sheets to keep you cool. They draw moisture away from the body to keep you dry, ensuring a deeper, more restorative night's sleep. Nothing compares to the comfort of Sheeks. The softness, unbelievable. And you're going to wake up feeling recharged and ready for a great day. So don't worry if you have a large bed. Sheeks come with deep pockets, so they'll fit any mattress perfectly. So what are you waiting for? Visit trysheeks.com/Laura. And use the promo code Laura, you'll get 25% off your purchase. Plus, you'll receive free shipping, a bonus pair of pillowcases, and a 30-night risk-free guarantee. That's trysheeks.com/Laura, code Laura. trysheeks.com/Laura, code Laura. Oh, the caterwauling and whining this morning on MSNBC.
If you want a metaphor for what Bob Mueller did yesterday, read the Bronze Star citation for Robert Mueller, who literally went back out onto the field through a stream, a field of fire. That's what he did yesterday. He was in the field of fire for the country. He went back into the field yesterday for this country, to protect and preserve this country. That's the oath he took of office when he became FBI director. And that's the oath, a similar oath, that the president of the United States has failed.
Joining us now to react to that and so much more, Joe DiGenova, former D.C. U.S. attorney, D.C. lawyer extraordinaire. Joe, we have so much to talk to you about, but the continued deification of Bob Mueller, even after that performance. I mean, these people are truly fanatics. I mean, they are just fanatical people over at MSNBC.
Well, that voice clip you just played, I assume, is the plagiarist who no longer works for the Boston Globe.
Yeah, Mike Barnicle.
Oh, Mike Barnicle. Yes, of course. Mueller's performance yesterday was really quite remarkable. He was unaware. He was hard of hearing. He was frail. He was halting. It was one thing for him not to write his report. It's another thing not to have read his own report. He appears to not know what is in it, and gave some of the most bizarre, uninformative testimony I have ever seen. And I think for the Democrats, it was as bad as it could possibly be.
Yeah, I think that the relentless buildup of Bob Mueller in elite legal circles, and I remember at the time, you and I were among the few people who said, why the need to build him up into this demigod status in 2017 when he was named special counsel? And again, I believe that you and I were among maybe four people who said, why are you doing that? Why are you making him into this person who like turned water into wine at the Feast of Cana? It's just ridiculous. and he's not that good. I mean, the elites always kind of protect each other, but the results will speak for themselves. And the results of this were a complete disaster for the left, complete disaster and embarrassment.
Yes, the hearing, of course, was that. And the hiring of Mueller was a disaster, but it was a design as part of a scheme. Rosenstein needed Mueller to cover his tracks, and Mueller agreed to do it. And to make no mistake about it, this was not an independent professional investigation. When Mueller turned over the running of this investigation to Andrew Weissman, the official hitman of the Obama Department of Justice, the single most unethical prosecutor in the last 30 years in the Justice Department, uncontrolled, never rebuked by any attorney general or deputy attorney general, allowed to do whatever he wanted. As soon as Weissman was picked, you knew that this was about getting the president no matter what. And, and that all proved to be true, and Mueller went along with it. And I do not excuse him. By the way,
I don't either.
In the military,
right?
He's a great, great person for that. However, we're not talking about his military service.
Right.
We're talking about his legal service, and what he did here was purposely become part of a coup d'état, and he should be ashamed of himself.
And McCabe was on Andrew McCabe was on New Day on CNN, and he. After watching that spectacle yesterday, this was his recommendation for next steps.
From my own experience at the very beginnings of this investigation, we confronted some very hard choices, choices that we knew would have negative repercussions on our organization and on us personally. And we made those choices anyway because it was our job and our duty to do so. I feel strongly that that's the same position Congress is in now, and they should step up to the plate and do their job. The time has come for Congress to pursue a dedicated impeachment inquiry.
Okay, yeah, I mean, this guy who should be in jail himself is like talking about Trump should be frog marched in a orange jumpsuit post-presidency.
Well, Andrew McCabe is a classic example of the type of people that James Comey surrounded himself with. I don't know if you've ever been in the presence of Andrew McCabe.
No.
But his lawyer, the one who represents him, Michael Bramwich, has an office down the hall from our law firm. And one day I stepped out of my office and I saw this petite figure come through that office door and walk to the elevators. He is very much like all of the men that Comey had around him. They're tiny. They're winsome. They weigh about 80 pounds. They look like they are wiry.
Pajama boys.
Gatekeepers.
Yeah, they're pajama boys.
They are pajama boys. They are wimps. And to listen to McCabe try to clothe himself in the goodwill of the American people and move for hard choices, my ass. They didn't make any hard choices. They made a choice to undo an election because they didn't like Donald Trump. And the notion that they knew there would be negative consequences, oh, sure. But they never thought there would be a federal grand jury in D.C. and Alexandria and Connecticut run by a bulldog named John Durham with an attorney general named Bill Barr. Listen, Andrew McCabe is one of the most despicable public servants whoever worked for this government. And I hope he gets his day in court.
Well, what do you think about this inspector general report, the second phase of the report, and then the Durham investigation? Yeah. And all these Republicans are just like, well, are we ever going to find out what really happened? Are we ever going to hold people accountable? We all feel like Lucy in the football. We're waiting for the next report, or we're finally going to see justice. I mean, are we kind of on a fool's errand here, like the Democrats were
no.
with Trump,
no,
or
no,
is something going to happen?
Actually, there are very, very good reasons for the delay. In the case of Horowitz, what's happening is, first of all, for a long time, the FBI and the CIA were denying Horowitz access to certain information that he needed. When Bill Barr came in, he discovered that problem. That's why he asked for declassification authority. Horowitz then got the documents that he needed, but then he ran into a problem with Chris Wray, the new FBI director, another pajama boy. And he was putting up obstacles until the attorney general said, stop, or you're going to have a very serious problem. Then something else happened. People, when they found out that Durham had been appointed and actually was putting witnesses in the grand jury, called Horowitz up and wanted to come back and change their testimony. So what's happening now is Horowitz is re-interviewing a series of people so they can get their stories more honest. And then finally, John Durham is conducting, according to my sources, a wide-ranging criminal conspiracy investigation of the Intel, FBI, DOJ community. It is a very serious case. And as Bill Barr says about John Durham, he loves puzzles.
He likes to put them together piece by piece. And by the way, at least someone on CNN, and this was a shocker for me to hear, Jeffrey Toobin was honest. Let's listen.
They got one control of the House of Representatives, and they were going to do investigations. Name one thing that any of these investigations have uncovered. Now we're almost, you know, at the summer recess.
Where are the
now,
tapes? What are they doing?
Let's not kid ourselves. This has been a wall-to-wall failure in all these committees.
I mean, I almost fell over when he said that. But I guess that's all. Well, I mean, what else is he going to do? I mean, honest people or people of any shred of honesty would say exactly what he just said.
Well, I have to agree with the little Jeffrey boy. He's right. This has been an abject failure. They have produced absolutely nothing. And there's a good reason for that. At the core of this matter, there is nothing to find. The president did nothing wrong. His campaign did nothing wrong. The conduct that is criminal and objectionable was performed by the CIA under Obama, the FBI under Obama, the Department of Justice under Obama, and outside contractors. That's why the appointment of Durham by Barr was such a stunning and important thing. He stripped away any jurisdiction that John Huber had out in Utah, that head fake that got appointed by Jeff Sessions before he ignominiously left the building. Toobin is right. The reason they're not producing anything is that they're investigating the wrong people.
Yeah, the reason this whole thing started and the real collusion that is so beyond obvious now between the Clinton campaign, Russian sources paid for by the associations with Fusion GPS that Bob Mueller, you know, looked like he, you know, was stumbling back into a memory care unit yesterday when he was asked about the Fusion GPS. It was like, what? Fusion? No, we didn't look at that. Like, what? I mean, yeah, that was embarrassing.
I think that demonstration of either real or feigned ignorance and lack of knowledge said everything that you needed to know about why this thing went awry from day one when he was appointed. Bob Mueller never should have been appointed. He's a close personal friend of James Comey. He knows Clapper and Brennan and all these people from his Intel days. He was not the person to appoint to this. The person to appoint to this was John Durham, somebody who didn't know anybody in Washington, D.C., and didn't care. All he wanted to do was find out what went wrong. Mueller didn't want to find out what went wrong. Mueller wanted to frame the president of the United States. This whole investigation, designed by Andrew Weissman, had one goal. They weren't going to find out about the Russian collusion. They didn't care about that. They wanted to get the president of the United States in an interview, set him up, accuse him of perjury or false statements in the report, and then recommend impeachment. When they didn't get that interview, because all of the lawyers advising the president, both paid and unpaid, told him you must never sit down with them, that was the end of the investigation, and the report represents a vindictive statement about the fact that they didn't get to interview the president. Shame on every lawyer in that office that was involved in this. They're all unprofessional, every single one of them.
Hey, Joe, is there a way to, and I asked John Yoo about this earlier, is there any usefulness in filing bar complaints in the D.C. bar against Weissman and Jeannie Rhee, at least those two, for failing to raise their affirmative duty to raise potential conflicts at the beginning of this case? Under the Professional Code of Ethics, have an affirmative obligation to do that.
Well, here's what is appalling about this. First of all, you're absolutely right. The D.C. bar is very friendly to Democrats and leftists. Mm-hmm. I think you would get nothing from the D.C. bar. But I do think that it is important that they be held accountable. And I think that there needs to be more public discussion by way of writing about them. Andrew Weissman did not go back to the Department of Justice when he ended his stint at the Mueller probe. And the reason was very simple. He was advised by people in that building that if you come back here, there's going to be a major ethics investigation of you. So don't come back. So he goes to Columbia or NYU, I don't know where he went, to teach law and then write his crazy book, which I predict will have the greatest pre-clearance review in history. Mm-hmm. But Jen Ree, I'm going to tell you something. Our law firm represented three people before the Mueller investigation, witnesses, and her demeanor, her performance in the meetings that we attended was so unprofessional. I can't imagine her going back to some big law firm, which apparently she's done. Apparently some of these law firms like people that have personalities that are like broken glass.
Yeah, well, Joe, when conservatives make mistakes, minor or major, they're never forgiven. But when liberal elites do the most egregious things, they are not only forgiven, their mistakes are hidden, shielded, and then they receive accolades and promotions. So being a liberal elite means never having to say you're sorry, basically.
I agree. And you know what I would do if I were Lindsey Graham holding his hearings? I'd call Jen Ree and Andrew Weissman and ask them, you know what? It's better than a bar referral. Make them sit there, subpoena them, and answer ethics questions for 3 or 4 hours. Have them both sitting there. I'll tell you something. That's the way to get at these people. Put them in front of the congressional committee under oath and ask them hours of ethics questions about their conduct. Believe me, nothing would be better television.
I agree. I mean, we have to, just like with the leaking of that Kavanaugh letter from Christie Blasey Ford was done out of the Pelosi office, not Pelosi, the Feinstein office. No repercussions. The Republicans claimed there was going to be an investigation referral. Nothing ever happened. People can leak things with impunity, turn the country inside out. And here we have conflicted lawyers who are acting against the mandate of the rules of professional responsibility. And they just skate away to another law firm?
See, I think your point is really fabulous. This is a silver platter for Lindsey Graham. Everybody says, how could Mueller have hired all these people? Well, let's find out. Let's put Jen Ree and Andrew Weissman in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, subpoena them, make them get lawyers, and start asking them questions about, not about the case, not about what they did, not about stuff that they're going to claim privilege on because they can't reveal, investigate. No. When you were hired, how much money had you given? Did you talk to Mr. Mueller about your conflicts? Don't you believe? I mean, you could go through the ethics rules. It would be wonderful hearing. And that's what Lindsey should do.
Yes.
That's one of the things that he should do.
I 100% agree. It's time to hold the wrongdoers accountable so this doesn't happen again, because it's going to keep happening. Same thing with the Supreme Court leaks. It's going to keep happening because nobody pays a price. And it's incumbent upon all of us to do this. And it urges. I'm going to talk about this tonight on the show. This is going to be a big part of the show tonight.
Here, here, Laura Ingraham, here, here. You are so right. What we need to do is we need to start a campaign to get Lindsey Graham, because he's not doing anything right now. He's waiting for Barr with him. That is a fool.
Why do that? In case he might not be good.
There's no reason to wait for Horowitz. Okay, if you want to wait for him, let's have hearings on Weissman and Ree and their ethical conflicts.
Yeah, because you know Horowitz isn't going to do that much on that anyway. I mean, he'll mention it, but the best way to get the American people understanding this and to scare people off doing this again is to put them on the stand, and they'll probably say, we're not going to answer because this is deliberative privilege or whatever. They'll try to make some BS argument that Mueller kept saying yesterday. So we're going to push this tonight on the Ingraham angle. There's another point that today your friend Adam Schefter was on CNN dodging this question. this question about impeachment because apparently Pelosi and Nadler last night behind closed doors got into a big brouhaha about whether impeachment should be pursued. Nadler pushing impeachment and Pelosi saying this is a loser. Let's listen.
What happened in that Democratic caucus meeting that we understand was a robust discussion that concerned what to do with impeachment? Are you closer today than yesterday?
I do think that Robert Mueller lived up to expectations, at least mine. He stuck to his report. That's what he said he was going to do. So I didn't go into the hearing expecting new facts.
Okay, so he lived, I mean, this man is another embarrassment.
Well, he's unethical. I mean, Adam Schiff is a disgrace to the House of Representatives. He's a liar. He falsely represents what happened in hearings. He has misrepresented the classified record. His rebuttal of the Nunes report was a false document. This is a man with no shame and much ambition. That's a very dangerous combination.
Joe DeGeneva here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Joe, thank you very much. Hope we have you on TV tonight. Heather in Kansas. Heather, welcome.
Welcome. Hello.
Hey.
Also a recovering Democrat.
All right. Love it.
I was surprised at the hypocrisy coming out of people like Anna Navarro, Jimmy Kimmel, Bette Midler, on how they were so offended by the way the Republicans were questioning Mueller. I mean, where has your outrage been about Whitaker, Barr, Homan, DHS?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they basically say that these people want to kill children.
That's a great point. They, I mean, they love to dish it out, but they can't take it, as my mom used to say. I mean, you can basically call people Pol Pot, Stalin, and Hitler all in one question, imply that they are, and that's fine. But you ask Mueller specific questions about the investigation that he spent $30 million on, and that's being too mean? Okay, nice try. We don't buy that at all. All right, I want to thank all of our great sponsors who made this podcast possible, including our friends at Home Title Lock, Pluto TV, and Sheiks. Remember, America now and forever on the Laura Ingraham podcast. See you next time.